Welcome to another in our series of Crucible podcasts. This one is a little bit different. We've not got one team, one project from one usually European Crucible. Instead, we're talking about three individual journeys of three Crucible alumni. They're from different Scottish Crucibles with different experiences and outcomes. But it's fair to say they've all found Crucible valuable and also memorable. And I do mean memorable because we're looking back 10, in some cases, almost 15 years as well. And because of that, that is why they're all here today. We haven't got a lot of time, so I'm going to plunge straight in. I'm going to start with Timothy Drysdale, now Professor Timothy Drysdale. But what were you and what mindset did you have, Tim, back in 2010 when you applied to Scottish Crucible?
Golly gosh, that is a while ago, isn't it? Look, back then I was wanting to become an academic who was doing electromagnetics research, seeing through clothes to find weapons and contraband. That was the sort of stuff I was doing at the time. And gosh, things have changed incredibly. Now I'm in digital education. And funnily enough, it turns out all of the technical things I was doing sort of came together when I made that move. But it wouldn't have happened without the creativity session and a hotel in the middle of somewhere in the middle of Scotland sometime during that crucible.
When you say you're in digital education, Tim, it's worth saying a bit about where you are in digital education.
Yeah, so I'm on to my second remote laboratory now. I did my first one at the Open University for distance learning, but it turns out that the traditional university sector has quite a lot of students and not a lot of buildings. So we're struggling to, as a sector, provide enough practical work and experiential learning. So what I do is put experiments in cute little containers that look like model shipping containers and foyers of buildings. And that saves about 150 times the space. So it's effectively practical work without needing the buildings. And then students can do real-time practical work online in a web browser, either in a classroom with staff and peers or at home at other times.
So what are the practicalities of that? How do you use a remote laboratory remotely?
Well, it's a lot easier than going into a real lab in some respects, because you don't have to set up the equipment. You don't have to do all the health and safety stuff. All you need to do is get the people a link. They open up in their browser. They can see the equipment through a camera. It responds in real time, so the emotional engagement is there. It's fun. People kind of get drawn into it, and you poke it and you make it do things, and you record the data and you download it and analyze it and then poke it again. And the great thing is you're not getting rushed out of the room like a traditional laboratory where we say, come in, hang your coat up, take your bag off, get over there, follow these steps. You've got to get this data or else you're not going to pass the course. Right, go, 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 go. With this, we say, hey, we'd like you to learn the following things, but have an exploration while you're at it and go and explore some other stuff. So we've seen students spend up to 10 times longer using these labs than they would a traditional lab, even 20 times in some cases. So, you know, it adds the exploration back in.
There is a certain chronologic logic to doing you all in time order and doing each story separately, but I think it's a lot more fun to entangle you all and see what happens. So I'm going to go next to Stuart Reed, again, now a professor, head of the Department of Biomedical Engineering at the University of Strathclyde, and you were part of the 2011 Scottish Crucible.
Yeah, that's correct.
What were you after when you thought, hang on, this sounds like an interesting thing to apply to?
At the time, I was holding a five-year fellowship, so five-year funding that was paying for my time to do my research from the Royal Society of Edinburgh and the Scottish Government. And at that time, I was primarily focused on gravitational wave astronomy research, really experimental stuff, developing materials for the mirrors and those detectors. But I was engaging quite heavily at that time with some biologists. It was useful within Crucible to gain confidence to progress that. And obviously, as you mentioned, I'm now head of biomedical engineering. So my career has changed substantially from where I started, focused on astronomy, to now also working very much in the life sciences and in biomedical research.
I mean, it is worth taking a pause to clock that properly, because you are a kind of one man grand unifying theory, aren't you? You go all the way from the nanoscale up to the cosmological scale.
Yeah, when you look at the research publications coming out from the research group, people will do get confused because you've got stem cell research alongside black holes colliding, and people wonder, how could this be possible? And they presume they've looked up the wrong person. But in fact, yeah, we do everything.
You say stem cells to black holes colliding. Can you expand on that? Because I think you invented a way to coax stem cells to turn into bone.
Indeed. So we had discovered that if you shake stem cells, which were taken from adult patients, these are the stem cells that form our connective tissues. They're called mesenchymal stem cells. So they form bone, tendon, cartilage, muscle, fat. You grow them in the lab, they normally turn into fat cells, which are not particularly useful and not what patients are crying out for. But we found if you shake them very, very small amplitude, 1,000 times a second, so 1 kilohertz, then it triggers those cells that turn into bone cells. And so that was something that we were working on. Around the time I did Scottish Crucible in 2011, we were starting that work. I did think at the time, naively, having never worked in this space, that it was such a simple technique that we would get this into patients in less than 10 years, but everybody said it would take at least 10 years. We had to improve the device. It was a bit of a Frankenstein device with cables hanging out of it. We had to improve that, you know, do product development, start the clinical and regulatory approval process. We then transferred those to various sites around the world, including a cell manufacturing site in Spain. And those cells have now been primed to become bone cells in Spain. They're currently frozen in Spain. And there are clinical trials planned later this year in Glasgow Royal Infirmary. So that's 11 or 12 years after we published the first papers. In fact, the advice people were giving us was correct. In parallel to that, we've also had a first attempt at looking at a wearable device that can be used for improving bone health. We didn't get a silver bullet in the first study, but there was some pre-bone formation evidence in those studies, which shows that perhaps there is a way to develop a wearable device with this same type of vibration that could be used to slow down or reverse the effects of osteoporosis.
This is very impressive, and it's so impressive, I think there's a name for this action, isn't there?
Yeah, nano-kicking is what we called it. I mean, that's what the first BBC article called it, although the late Adam Curtis, who came up with this as a potential concept, was actually really angry that we had used this phrase with the BBC because he thought it should be nano-tickling. But anyway, nano-kicking is what stuck.
I can understand the debate, though. I mean, nano-tickling might in some ways be more accurate, but it's not necessarily going to be taken quite as seriously, is it?
Exactly. It doesn't quite fit in with the image that we're trying to give.
And at the other end of the scale, I believe you're one of the kind of pioneers of work on gravitational waves.
Yeah, our lab works on the mirror coatings. So we require the mirrors and gravitational wave observatories to be very reflective for the light that we bounce off them to measure their position and try to see changes in that position due to neutron stars or black holes colliding somewhere in the universe. So we help make those mirror coatings. And so we require the light to be reflected at 99.999% reflectivity. And we still work on that within the research group. And although it sounds worlds apart, actually the underlying technology, which is laser interferometry, measuring vibration of stem cells or measuring the stretching and squeezing of space-time, is actually the same technique which we use for both. So there's still a connection and the group still works as one group.
Do you think this is not just the crucible way, but the way of the future? Increasingly, we're going to have the most interesting work, some of the most interesting advances taking place where these disciplines rub up against each other.
Without a doubt. And I think with many of the global challenges which are ahead of us, they're only going to be solved with, you know, bringing expertise from a wide variety of areas together. I think the other thing that Crucible teaches us is that, you know, connectedness enhances your ability to have impact and meaning, irrespective of where you're coming from.
And we can't say it was Crucible that inspired you to have this cross-disciplinary, transdisciplinary, interdisciplinary view of things, but it certainly encourages that belief that you shouldn't be siloed away in your own particular academic region.
Definitely. And for me, a lot of it was to do with confidence. You know, those networks are available to us, but we don't always have the confidence to go exploring them because they're outside of our traditional subject areas or, you know, in other buildings, other departments, other universities. And the confidence part was key for me. And Crucible was a massive milestone, I think, in my career.
It's about knowledge, but it's also about not being intimidated by other areas. Okay, we'll pick up on some of those threads later, but we want to get to the final member of our trio, only final because she's the most recent, Dr. Heather May Morgan, now Dean for Enterprise and Innovation and Senior Lecturer in Applied Health Sciences at the University of Aberdeen. But 9 years ago, what were you and what were you hoping for from Crucible?
In 2015, I was a jobbing research fellow who had actually started out in criminology. I'd done my PhD, applied for a few sort of contract research positions and was really trying to get funding to consolidate my research. Now I'm Dean for Enterprise and Innovation across the university.
So is it fair to say you're all about encouraging enterprise culture in Aberdeen?
Yes, absolutely. A lot of my work has always involved working externally with police, prison service, health services, looking at the applications of technologies day to day, but also working with innovators, creating new technologies, doing research inside the university to look at the effectiveness and whether things are feasible or not.
Right. And I suppose it's an extension of that Crucible philosophy about collaboration, is to not just collaborate between different disciplines and different areas of academia, but to collaborate with different sectors of society outside of academia as well.
Exactly. Yeah. And we're all about that. That's a big push for us at the moment. So, really exciting to be leading on that.
If you're leading, who's following and where have you got to?
I don't know about following as much as kind of walking alongside each other. So yeah, I mean, I've always really worked with companies and with organizations outside of academia. That's been a strong thread, but I think Crucible Lab 3 really, you know, struck a chord with me, where we focused on knowledge exchange and entrepreneurship. And part of my role now is actually to go out and seek those opportunities in local, national kind of communities, looking for problems that companies need to solve, organizations need help with, and to identify colleagues, students within the university who might have the expertise to help them figure out a problem, a solution to a problem, or to work on something. It might be bringing industry into the university, it might be sending people outside of the university. So it's all of that, really, and just trying to strengthen the relationships and our reputation, I suppose, for being a place, a university that's open to those opportunities and where people can come and work with us.
This is sort of zooming out, big picture stuff, looking at whole ecosystems.
Yeah, absolutely. And certainly that's something, we're based in the Northeast here at Aberdeen University. So that's something that we're looking at, a kind of regional, what, you know, energy is big here, but oil and gas is not the future. So, you know, looking at what the requirements of the local area are, but also thinking about things like, we've got increased tourism in Aberdeen at the moment with cruise ships coming in, but also we've got strong food and drink and digital. And so, you know, how come, for example, computing science students work with local digital businesses and to, you know, generate more business and more regional, I suppose, recovery and having that regional impact. But also, how do we retain students in the local area and build capacity in different fields? So I think that's something that is part of what is quite a long shopping list of a job description. But yes.
Let's go back to the beginning for you all then. Tim, when you started to do Crucible, what were you expecting and what were the biggest changes from what you expected? What were the big surprises of actually doing Crucible?
Oh, it's a really good question, because I think sometimes you just don't know what to expect from a process like that. And I think I thought I'd meet some cool people and we'd probably develop some collaborative projects and have a fun time doing some stuff. What I didn't expect was that it would fundamentally change my approach to how I was doing my work. So yeah, that was a bit of a surprise.
Was it only with hindsight that you realized, oh, actually this was the turning point, the pivot?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, looking back, I can see the dots all in a straight line between all of the things that I did and where I am now. But at that time, I couldn't see what was coming, but I do remember thinking to myself, my gosh, it's 9:45 in the morning and I've just extracted all the value out of this 3-day event I think I would need to feel like it was complete. Like, there was just a really powerful moment in one session that I do remember noticing at the time.
I think maybe we ought to be explicit about what that moment was.
Well, I'll tell you what it was. We did this exercise where in groups, we got handed out envelopes that had clues to some sort of problem in them. And I remember opening mine and looking at it and just thinking, I think it's sort of something like this, but I don't actually know for sure and I don't have the complete solution. So wouldn't want to be seen to be wrong. So let's not say anything. And then somebody else said exactly what I had thought, just as murky, just as incomplete. And that triggered a third person to say, well, you put that together with what I'm thinking and we get this. And we had the solution as a result of those two people speaking up. And I thought it was a beautiful analog for the way the scientific community works. Mm. And the sense that I had of having missed out because I didn't have the confidence to open my mouth and say, this is incomplete, but I think it moves the ball on. Just, I never wanted to feel like that ever again.
Stuart, this is exactly echoing the point you were making about confidence. There is knowledge, but there is also confidence, and there is also that ability to stand up in public and not worry if what you're saying might be stupid sometimes in a search for something meaningful.
Exactly. And it's almost like that light bulb moment that Tim describes. And I think many of us, or most of us, perhaps all of us who have done Crucible events will have experienced this during that process, because you mix with people from a whole variety of disciplines, but within that setting, you come up with ideas together, and some of them progress, some of them don't. And I mean, one of the things which I remember from my time was that there was a music composer in our cohort, and we did meet afterwards and tried to look at ways in which, you know, we could musically represent the signals which we were seeing from black holes colliding and neutron stars colliding. People have done this in the past, but it was just, you know, is that confidence to speak to people in completely different fields and just explore. And some of those triggered, you know, ideas which are still ongoing just now, and others were just where they were nice to explore for a moment in time.
I've obviously hosted a few of these events, and sometimes you get projects which come together where you think, this is incredible. These people would never have met, but they found some kind of harmony. I'm not trying to use the musical thing here. Other times, you know, they're kind of reaching to get that last member of the group in, and they haven't really got much to add. But the only way to do it is to keep trying these things.
Exactly. And I think one of the challenges which many of us face is that in our regular careers, we don't often get those opportunities. And Crucible provides that opportunity in a really nice setting that's well structured, but with the freedom that, you know, new ideas can flourish.
And Stuart, did you have any pivotal moment like Tim was telling us, or was it just the whole thing?
It was the whole thing. There was lots of conversations, but, you know, one of the things which I guess is an indirect effect was that I had met at that Crucible event someone that I'd interviewed directly before, I think, at the Royal Society of Edinburgh for our research fellowship. So someone who was following the same career path as myself, actually in a very similar field. And then I realized that, you know, it took the Crucible event to bring us together and realize that we could actually work together. And we worked together for many years after that. And that really challenged me. It challenged me that, you know, I essentially passed this person in the corridor as we were going through our mutual interviews, and we're both successful in getting that funding. But there was no setting for us to actually get together and discuss possible projects. And that's, again, you know, I talk about confidence, but it's not just the confidence, it's realizing that those opportunities are out there, and you just have to explore your networks and realize that there are people out there that have the solutions that you perhaps need. Crucible really set that in my mind that, you know, had it not been for that, that opportunity would have been missed.
Yeah, it's what I call proactive serendipity. You know, you want chance things to happen, but you have to allow the circumstances to bring those people together for those chance events to happen. Heather, similar story for you?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's not just meeting with people within your cohort, but the way the Crucible works is that you're quite often confronted with people from previous cohorts. You come in to do talks or presentations or facilitation, or, you know, the kind of events around that are more informal networking. And I can remember seeing a colleague of mine who'd been on the Crucible a few years prior to me and had then progressed in her career through the university, and thinking, oh, goodness, that's kind of accelerated, or has it accelerated, or, you know, how is that? And sort of watching her career development with interest. And then I suppose thinking, what are the kind of bigger things that I want to do? What do I believe in terms of the university? You know, what could I lead on? And having that kind of bigger thinking that kind of inspired me. And I think the Crucible gives you the confidence to, I suppose, package up perhaps complex stories around collaborations that don't quite necessarily make sense on the surface.
And I suppose there's an element, isn't there, of just being at the early stage of your academic careers. Your ambitions are governed by your confidence, and you're looking at these foothills of academia thinking, maybe one day I can scale those foothills. But as a result of doing Crucible, you're looking at the mountains behind thinking, yeah, I can have a go at that as well.
Yeah, I think that's really true. And it just awakens you to, I suppose, the range, rather than seeing a sort of direct career path or a mountain in front of you, like you say, it is actually looking around and not seeing yourself as perhaps alone in forging your career, or not being quite like somebody else, but actually it's sort of what's the sum of the parts, and where do I fit in here, or what do I want this mountain to look like, or how do I want to shape it or scale it? So I think it does, it just, it's a way of thinking and seeing.
Another aspect of Crucible that a lot of different people have different reactions to is the speed networking. And it's a very non-traditional way of working. You know, you normally have whole days or long meetings to exchange ideas, but you're getting to know each other and getting a sense of each other in just a couple of minutes or so. How did you all find that? I'll start with you, Tim.
Oh, gosh, you're taking me back. I'm just trying to remember some of the perceptions of these meetings ages ago. Look, I think as you get more experienced in interacting with humans, you realize you have to package your messages up for consumption in a few seconds or less. And some of that perception comes from being the person that is moving from meeting to meeting, from topic to topic. And they're so vastly different that, you know, unless you've got a really short, easy to receive package of information, you're not really sure what the other person's on about sometimes. And I think the speed networking was a great example of that, because here's this person in front of you. You've no idea what they know. So you can't really sort of pitch your message using that background information. So as much as it potentially was challenging, or, you know, the introverts getting a little wound up thinking, oh my gosh, I've got to talk to all these people, it was a super valuable experience.
My memory of the speed dating was that, you know, you go into it and perhaps this is what you'd expect from a dating thing, that you think, well, maybe there'd be one or two people that I'd be interested in following up conversations with. My memory of it was that almost every conversation had something really interesting. And so during the process, you're, as Tim was saying, you're trying to make sure that you stick to your 1 minute describing your background and what you work on, and trying to be succinct, trying to listen to the other person, but remembering that the last three conversations you just had were really interesting and you didn't want to forget about it. So it was a real whirlwind.
It's about not just the way you interact with others. It's about realizing you can deliver a message about yourself and receive a message about other people in a very short period of time.
Yeah, I think as well, it just shows you that you can have these conversations, and it forces you as well, where, like, quite often at networking events, you know, you might talk to some of the people, but not all of the people, even if it's very carefully coordinated that seating plans and things force you to move among other people or work in different groups. I think that speed dating thing just made everybody get to know something about everybody else. And I think that was the true value, because with the best will in the world, it wouldn't have happened organically.
There are many versions of Crucible, but you're all people who've participated in Scottish Crucible. Do you think there is something about the size of Scotland, the nature of the academic network in Scotland, that makes it particularly fruitful for Crucibles? Stuart?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we are fortunate in a relatively small country that, you know, you can connect quite a diverse range of people together, and they don't feel so distant or separated, because in principle, we can all travel to each other's locations, you know, on the same day, even have a meeting and travel back home again. And so I think there is something about the Scottish context. And I think Scotland, for whatever reason, has historically and continues to be an interesting place to innovate and come up with ideas. And I think for Scottish Crucible, we benefit because we're in Scotland and the heritage that Scotland brings. I think that also feeds into the programme in a sort of background way.
Heather?
Yeah, I think that Stuart's right. And I think that ability to move between universities, but also see the connections between what we're working on, but also being in Edinburgh for the first session of each Crucible, and being at the Royal Society of Edinburgh, and being, I don't know, feeling sort of steeped in that connection with history and the achievements of Scottish universities and academics, but also then going through to the Scottish Parliament and having those, you know, connections with MSPs and workshops on communication skills. And that kind of really brings to life the impact that you can have for your research, and it makes it real and accessible, and it feels very joined up, I suppose. So I think there is something in that sort of Scottish identity that, that does perhaps is different to other Crucibles.
Do you have anything to add?
I'm just thinking about the tensions between our innate desire as humans to belong to groups and have defining characteristics for those groups, and our much more recent understandings that we gain immense strength through diversity. And I think Crucible's threading a bit of a line between those by finding that commonality in the country we're located in, but encouraging the diversity in the membership of the people that are in the group.
Now, the flip side of this is, do you think there is such a thing as a good Cruciblist, or can anyone be a Cruciblist in theory? Tim?
Well, I think that picks up really neatly on the point there that was coming to my mind when we were talking about the value and the structure of the crucible, because I was thinking something that was important to me was the sense that I had to prove that I had something beyond, I just want to be a good electromagnetics researcher. And I remember in my application making a song and dance about the public engagement work I'd done. And then getting selected to me felt like somebody saying, hey, we see something in you that means you could go beyond just being a disciplined researcher, and that you would be open to receiving guidance about doing something other than just a standard, very narrow focused academic career. And that was valuable to me. It was kind of a sense of giving me permission to explore parts of my brain, parts of my feelings, thoughts about what to do that I hadn't otherwise. And I wonder whether everybody has the potential. I think everybody should have access to all the opportunities. And I'm just trying to figure out, I don't really have the answer right now, but there is a tension there between selecting and filtering for certain characteristics that are already present and just need developing a bit more, versus ones that maybe aren't really super highly prevalent in somebody. And so I think it would be good to understand that a little bit more and just make sure that, you know, we're not shutting the door to anybody who could really benefit.
It's almost like an echo of that old political dynamic that the kind of people who push themselves forward to be leaders aren't always the best people to be leaders. It might be there are people who are very good to be on the crucible, but they'd never think of applying. They don't think they're right.
Indeed, absolutely. And I think somebody who maybe had a warm arm around their shoulders say, come, join this group. We think this is going to be really valuable for you. Could be an absolutely excellent way to do it. So, yeah, I know. I totally agree with you on that.
Stuart?
I would agree. And I think, you know, what you get out of a program right like Scottish Crucible, you know, does depend on your ability to be curious and your openness to go beyond what you currently do and to explore new things or new grounds that you haven't previously considered. And yes, I would completely echo Tim's point that it's an opportunity that, you know, many people don't get to partake in. And it would be nice to know that there was some way in which you could expand, you know, similar opportunities to those who wouldn't traditionally think of applying for this, or even to those in completely different sectors. You know, we're very concentrated within the academic sector, but, you know, within industry, within education, you know, even considering, you know, people who are coming from completely different backgrounds could benefit in some way from a program like this. But you need to be curious. There needs to be something in your mind that's looking to learn from others.
Heather, I've left you to last on this because you're all about encouraging enterprise culture. So would it be more enterprising to have more crucibles for more people, or almost to have a kind of almost compulsory version of crucible that young academics have to run through?
I do think there's a value, and it is kind of sad that it's limited to 30 people, but I also do think that in that selection process and it being very selective, that there is something about being just one of 30 each year that sort of elevates. I think if everyone did it, then it wouldn't be as special. And that's perhaps a selfish reflection, having been very privileged to have gone through the process.
A reflection in one of Stuart's laser mirrors. Yes, exactly. Finally, if somebody's listening to this and thinking of applying to Crucible, I presume you would just all go, please do. Heather?
Yes, yeah. In fact, I've recommended it year on year to different colleagues. When I look at what Crucibleists have achieved individually and collectively, there's something about the Scottish Crucible that works, and I'm saying works in inverted commas. I mean, I think it introduces you to so many different ideas about the ways that you can work, what you can do with your research, leadership roles, different sort of job titles, and where you could sort of take your career and what you can do with your work. And I think it gives you something about building on that confidence, but not just having the confidence internally to do things, but externally to, you know, to go forward for awards and believe that you can achieve these things. So I think it gives you practical tools, but I think it gives you a sort of inner self-belief to sort of drive things and take responsibility and become a leader. So I think what it does is it does very well. And I think certainly the range of sessions that you participate in, I can't imagine that, you know, it seems to sort of be all encompassing and cover all the angles and certainly the things that I've needed in my journey, I refer back to Crucible materials and it's there. Particularly, and this is where to the previous point, I suppose, particularly colleagues who maybe have struggled and said, well, your career hasn't been quite linear. Have you got any advice? And I'll be like, Scottish Crucible. And definitely point those colleagues in that direction. But I help colleagues, I've shared my application with loads of people just so, to encourage that. But I think perhaps I'll now reflect after the previous question and comments on actually everyone. So, yeah.
Stuart.
Absolutely. And I often will say to people that, in terms of the time spent, I always saw Scottish Crucible as the best value process that I went through in terms of, how much development I saw personally. Scottish Crucible, 100%. Amazing value, and I always recommend people do it if they get the opportunity. Definitely apply.
Tim, finally to you, what would you be saying to somebody who's thinking, shall I, shan't I? Maybe they're hearing this and they're right at the beginning of their career and they're thinking, this sounds great, but they're a bit intimidated by how successful all three of you are and they can't quite focus on them being in that position 10, 15 years down the line.
Yeah, it's really hard to believe it when somebody says to you, oh, if I can do it, anybody can do it. Because you look at someone who's done it and go, well, surely you had some characteristics that meant that you were special in some way. And surely as the person looking up at that, you think you don't. But it seems ridiculous to say it. But actually, yeah, just don't worry about that. It's going to enrich your entire career in a really non-linear way that you won't be able to predict in advance. And I think that's probably the same message we need to be continuing to give to the various different funding bodies that are associated with this, which is that we have a vibrant culture here for research and that events like this contribute in a very, very non-linear way, but do an immense amount to spark off the really creative kinds of activities we want happening in the country to keep us at the forefront of all the really good things that we're doing.
Doing all those really good things at Scottish Crucible and over their career since, you heard from Professor Stuart Reid, head of the Department of Biomedical Engineering at the University of Strathclyde, Dr. Heather May Morgan, now Dean for Enterprise and Innovation and Senior Lecturer in Applied Health Science at Aberdeen University, and speaking last, Professor Tim Drysdale, Chair of Technology Enhanced Science Education in the School of Engineering at the University of Edinburgh. That was a slight departure from our usual format with these podcasts of focusing on European Crucible participants, but variety adds spice to what we cook up in these Crucible casts. So if you'd like a second or subsequent helping, there's plenty more where this came from.